Hey now, welcome to the Dirty Side of the Track, America's leading Formula One podcast. I'm Brian, that's Rob. It is the off-season week number one. I miss it so much already. How you doing, Rob?
Yeah, I'm doing good, thanks. Do miss it. Then I was listening to a couple of podcasts on my go for a long run when my daughter is swimming on a Saturday morning, and I listened to a couple, and one of them was the Pad Hoc with friend of the show Nate Saunders on it. And he was kind of comparing it to NFL, where he was like, do you know what? Maybe we've got too much F1 at the moment. It's like he loves the NFL because you get like August, a little bit of preseason. Then it smashes it from September through what, February, when Super Bowl is.
January,
and then you basically get nothing for another 6 months or 5 months, whatever it is. So you build that anticipation towards the next round. Whereas they were saying like they were toast after this season, the amount of traveling they all did. And they were like, you know, we got 87 days until it all goes again, which we'll be here before you know it. You'll have Christmas, New Year, and then there'll be leaked footage of liveries and car launches, and we'll be doing this whole thing all round again. So, yeah, I don't know. Too many races, maybe? Not sure.
I mean, I will say they're even extending the calendar, right? This year's calendar was a planned 24 races. We obviously lost China and Imola for the flooding, and so then we had 22, but it still ended, you know, in America here, Thanksgiving time. Next year, it goes into December, like December 4th, and it starts the very, very beginning of March. So it is an even extended calendar of the same planned number of races. So I hear you. And I mean, Paul was tired last week, as you said, the Pad Hoc crew.
Was he? Didn't mention it.
Yeah, he didn't talk about it. No, I get it. As a fan, it's hard to agree that maybe a little less of a good thing is better. But there's merit in your conversation.
So we haven't really got anything lined up to talk about today, but we kind of pulled something out of thin air. I was going to say from somewhere else, but I'll just say from thin air.
We're a clean show.
We're going to end up with probably three season reviews. So a trilogy, if you like. And we're going to start off with just mine and Brian's view of it today. But it will be stat-less because we're going to really double down on that. You've got to give the stat man time to pull all these stats together. So we will have a second look back where we kind of really pull the season stats together and hopefully get joined by Pit Lane Paul as well and kind of get his view of the season intertwined into that. And then to cap the trilogy off, we want to do the Discord episode that we've been talking about. So that's the grand plan. Not necessarily sure they're going to be back-to-back over the next 3 weeks, but being as we're coming up towards Christmas, we thought we'd be inspired by a classic Christmas movie. So our trilogy is going to be the Drive Hard trilogy. Today is the original Drive Hard.
Anyone who says
it's not a Christmas movie is wrong. But there we
agreed, are. 100% wrong. My friend Mike once sent me a T-shirt that says Nakatomi Plaza Christmas Party 1984, whatever the year was, and it's the greatest T-shirt. I wear it around, and people are like, "Yes," you know, and they it gets well received. But if this is Die Hard ripoff, which one of us is John McClane, and which one of us is Argyle?
Oh yeah, okay. I mean, I don't think either of us are built like John McClane. I mean, you're probably closer than I am, but I'm not sure I'm booking you to shuffle around in small air vents because you know, you've got wide shoulders.
Yeah, I wouldn't say.
So I think I'm going to have to take the John McClane thing. I'll just, halfway through this episode, I'll take my socks off and I'll go and run over some open glass. And then
glass.
We can really...
Who gives it about glass? All right, moving on.
Anyway, moving on. So what we're going to do is news and social, what there is of it. A little video vault. We're going to barely get the door open before we're closing it again. And then we're going to kind of look back at our review of 2023, which is going to probably stay away from the classic things like the title fight and all that kind of stuff, because there's probably a lot more stats to be mined in and around that area. So we're going to kind of have our alternative review of things that caught our attention, things we even forgot even happened this year, probably. So that's the idea. But first off, news and social. And you know it's a slow week when this is the biggest and most exciting thing that happened, really.
Oh, come on. Numbers two story is the biggest. It just happened last.
I was going to go there first, actually.
Oh, well, go.
No, I wasn't. I'm totally lying. Because I even though it was good, the second thing that we'll talk about, I mean, the first thing was Chris Medland's tale, the saga of the wedding ring. If nobody has seen this, go on to Twitter, go on to Chris Medland and look for a thread from Abu Dhabi at the beginning of the week. He was still there for the testing that was going on. And so the tale goes, I don't even think this Mercedes engineer or member of staff was supposed to be thrown into the water. I think they got knocked in when someone else was being thrown in. And as they went in and came out, they realized they didn't have two things. They didn't have their glasses and they didn't have their wedding ring. The glasses were apparently very quickly recovered. The wedding ring, not so much. It tail unfolded over a couple of days where somebody went and borrowed scuba gear and a metal detector from a guy who had a boat there and went diving down trying to find the ring and nothing. And Twitter was just in turmoil. It's like, oh my gosh, there's got to be a happy ending to this story. They've got to find the ring. And they gave up. The dude that was scuba diving just gave up. Couldn't find it. Next day, owner of said boat, he decided to don the scuba gear and take a slightly second but bigger metal detector down and found it. And which is amazing. Returned the ring to the Mercedes team who are going to transport it home to the dude that's already gone back to the UK. My little slight gripe with this is why did he break out the big metal detector for the first guy that was going down? Why did he hold that in reserve?
Have you ever lost your wedding ring?
Yes. Yeah, I went to watch
This is the
a
part where you
music
tell the
concert.
story, yeah.
I went to the music concert with my wife, and we were right up at the front. And the it was so hot in there. It was held in a student union hall. It was just like designed to not let any type of temperature out whatsoever. And I was so hot and sweaty. At the end, I was clapping, you know, clapping, clapping, clapping. As I clapped, this glint caught my eye, and with all the sweat on my fingers, the ring had just fired off onto the stage.
No.
Okay, yeah, onto the stage. The dude who's performing then kicks it, doesn't see it. It just like hits his foot basically. He goes off into the black abyss, which is under the stage, like on the other side of the fences, but underneath the stage. I'm like, oh gosh. So I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm in so much trouble here. This is ridiculous. And the gig comes to an end. I go to the security guard and ask if I can go and sort of clamber under the stage. Because my wedding ring's gone, and he doesn't believe me. He thinks it's like this is the most ingenious story he's ever heard for somebody to try and get backstage and try to crash backstage and go meet people. I'm like, no, literally, my wedding ring's underneath there. I was having a look, couldn't find anything, and then these two young ladies, two angels, they were very attractive as well. They see something, they climb over the fence, and one of them goes under, and the security guard won't let them. And she's pointing, and he comes over and gets the ring and hands it back. And these two are like, oh, yeah, it's great, turn around to my wife. And I'm like, what should be a celebratory moment of me retrieving the ring and putting the ring
She
back on?
punched
It's
you.
like, no, I think the fact that maybe I celebrated too hard with the two very attractive young ladies that helped find it. What about you? Have you ever lost it?
Yeah, once it was bad. I was in the limo of a bachelor party. I was the only married person in the. I was the first one to get married to my friend. So I'm in the limo at this bachelor party, and I had lost some weight. And the ring, which had fit when I tried it on, was now a little loose. Not a lot, but like I could manipulate it and quickly get it over my knuckle. And so I'm in this limo, and there'd been products imbibed. And so we were having a great time going to a place we shouldn't go to. And I'm gesticulating wildly, as I'm known to do, talk with my hands. And as I do this, the ring comes flying off. It's in the limo, so that's good. But the limo windows and sunroofs are all open. And I go, oh my God, I just lost my ring. And we had the driver pull over so we could do this without the car moving. And it took us 30 minutes to find it. It was in the car, it was under like a cushion. We found it. My friends gave it back to me, and they beat the living snot out of me at this point. I mean, like, really, like, I was bruised and, like, badly. And they're like, if you ruined 30 minutes of the bachelor party with your stupid wedding ring. And so, anyway, yeah, that was the only time I've ever lost it. Found as well. So, all good.
Ah, there we are. Look at that. We
Look at
both had wedding ring
us.
stories and neither of us knew them. So look at that. We both learned something new about each other. In terms of learning something new, we learned something new a couple of days ago or yesterday or whenever it was, that Williams did retain Logan Sargeant for 2024. I feel like you should play the little if you've got it on
I'm
hand there.
happy to.
Come on.
So coming into 2024, Williams, Wolf, Alex Albon, and Logan the Sargeant. I have a question for you. And we talked about this last week, when James Vowles was so adamant that they had not signed him yet, you and I both thought it might be a negotiating ploy. But then during the week, when Vowles says, "Hey, I want to go back and look at all the season's data before we kind of make a decision here," I'm thinking, "Uh-oh, this might not be good." And then when they signed him, I was really happy that he gets a second chance. You and I both said thought it was deserved. I know you posted that on Twitter during the Rob holiday on Twitter. That was, I appreciate you doing that. So, I mean, what did you think? Did you think this was going to happen? I actually had lost faith since the end of Abu Dhabi somehow during the week.
I hadn't because when we both got together in one episode, we put together the crash stats and Logan was up there causing the most crash damage. And we said, look, this is Mick Schumacher territory. You can do a lot of things in Formula One, but if you're costing a lot of dollars for your crashes, then that's the thing that makes the team really hard to look beyond. And you, I think you might have said, he's probably not even got one more crash like that left in him. He needs to stay clean for probably, I want to say, last six races. And we were races out or something. And he did. He stayed clean. He actually almost got into points a couple of times and didn't do anything stupid. Okay, Abu Dhabi got his track times deleted, so he didn't actually get through any quali. But that's fine. I think those are the things you're allowed to get away with. The mistake of a track limit is much different than the mistake of ruining the car. So because he stayed and kept his nose clean, I think everything else was probably worth another shot for another season.
Yeah, agreed. I agree. I'm happy he has it. And why don't you talk a little bit about the Ferrari note, because I want to get into contracts in a second after that.
Yeah, and I think I might be a little bit out of date because I think I've seen something else drop not long before I came online, but I was watching Manchester City against Spurs, so I didn't really read it. But Ferrari issued a statement that said that their lineup will remain the same beyond 2024. Didn't really give any kind of meat on the bone to what that meant. So it was kind of like, don't expect a silly season from us next year, because not only are these two the lineup for 2024, but beyond. Okay, thanks for that, Ferrari.
So you talk about silly season. You can say it was obvious. I don't think it was quite that obvious, but I did predict the quietest silly season ever, and it turned out to be so. We end up with the same lineup going from end of 23 into 24 for the first time ever. There'll be no rookies on the grid in 24, which is kind of nuts. However, I want to talk about the number of contracts expiring in 24, because we are teed up for the greatest silly season ever coming on in 20. I mean, like whatever your expectations are, if you need Fernando to post an Instagram picture of him smiling in Mallorca or wherever with a laugh on his face in the middle of the summer, and then all the things happen after that, it's going to be double that, because both AlphaTauri drivers, or Red Bulls Racing, Blue Bulls, whatever they are, will be done in 24. Both Williams drivers will be done in 24. Both Alfa Romeo drivers will be done in 24. Both Haas drivers.
Know that team. They won't be driving next
right.
year.
Sauber, whatever Sapp's bad hat is, team, will be driving done in 24. Both Haas drivers will be done, I have a bad one from them, hat, in 24. Both Alpine drivers will be done in 24. Now, McLaren has both drivers locked up through 24, so they will not participate. Both Mercedes drivers are locked up beyond 24. They will not participate. According to Rob's note, it sounds as though both Ferrari drivers will be retained beyond 24. They won't participate. But Fernando is done in 24. Who knows when Lance's contract is up? The thing is, like, you know,
he doesn't have a contract with his dad. He's just, just as a pocket money arrangement.
That's, and Checo. Checo's the other one. But that's well over half the grid. And there are a lot of drivers who are young in that group who are talented and will be in demand by other teams. So I anticipate some wild silly season during 24, starting in the summertime.
So you're going on record. This is the same way that you predicted the quietest ever.
Which was obvious.
Prediction.
And this is a pretty obvious one too, but I do anticipate.
It was as obvious. I think there was a lot of swirl that maybe one or two drivers might move, but you pulled it. You said, you know, I have to give you credit where credit's due. Very, very early on, you said, quietest silly season ever. Fact.
This will be the musical chairs edition of 24. So some people will lose a drive, and we will see some, quote, rookies, even though they may have taken a year off. Liam Lawson, Theo Pourchaire, there's others who will get a sniff. But to me, Liam Lawson will definitely be on the grid in 2025. I mean, that's in my opinion.
It's too early for Audi to be making any driver announcements. Are we getting Sebastian Vettel back on the grid?
I think Seb's done. I hate to say it. But I think we'll see some of these drivers that we mentioned move teams, and it'll create dominoes. And I don't think it'll be quiet. I think it'll be loud. And I think it's going to be fun to watch. And yes, some will stay. I mean, I could definitely see Valtteri staying at Sauber for 25, 100%, like as an example. But I definitely see a lot of these guys moving. And I think there'll be movement in season too. Not just announced in season for next year. I think there'll be in-season movements.
And some switcheroos going on like we saw this year with Yuki. Just wants one season where he has the same person that he can talk to all season, though.
Yeah, he had a lot of teammates. Anyway,
I got three things here, which I'm not going to say I've stolen from the Engine Braking podcast because I'm going to give them the credit that it came from them. I was on
Yeah,
my
you're
run listening
citing
to the
it.
three things that Dan and Blake or Brake or Engine Mode 11, whatever you want to call these guys, were speaking about, which kind of got me thinking. I was like, oh, do you know what? That is pretty good. So first off was, does Max get a bad ride on everything? Do other people, are they allowed to get away with things that he isn't? And they were saying, you know, Max overtaking in the pit lane in Abu Dhabi. He was literally on in the speeds, like doing at least 12, 13 miles an hour. I mean, it wasn't exactly dangerous when he went past anybody, but everybody lost it. It was like, oh my God, Max needs to be ejected from the sport. That's dangerous, putting other people into blah, blah, blah. Apparently, I don't even remember seeing this, but I went back and checked and they were right. Fernando did exactly the same thing, and the reaction was silence. It's like, oh, it's Fernando, he can do what he wants, it's fine. So crime is not a crime when it's everyone's fan favorite Fernando, but if Max does it, hang him now.
Well, I think this is correct. I think this is 100% correct because he's in the spotlight and he is the most, sort of lightning rod of attention type driver. I mean, he's always found a little thing to do that annoy his haters and really are harmless. Like when he would pull up last year next to Charles when they had a battle, when Charles actually had a good car, and they would go back and Max was under the safety car, would run up right next to him and then back up and then right next to him back up. And it was just annoying, but there was no problem with that. He never overtook him, and other people did it, but Max was the only one who got the problem. So I agree with you on this 100%. It's the same in basketball. Like Shaq would get fouled all the time, and they never called it because it's Shaq. He's so big. He's a giant. They're like a separate set of rules. Max is so good and talented and such a lightning rod of attention. There's almost like a second set of Max rules that are in effect, and it's not fair to him.
The other thing they picked up on was we mentioned it last week, the commission that had come out and said that tire blankets were going to be retained next year. They weren't going to get done away with. But Blake kind of used his old engineering kind of perspective to say, do you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if someone's done some calculations here that this isn't going to be the environmentally friendly thing that they think it is by taking away these blankets. Because the downside of taking the blankets away is that cars will now have to do multiple warm-up laps in quali in order to be able to put that one in. So at the moment, you come out on warm tires, all bad tire warmers, bad for the environment. But a car can go out on an out lap, put a banker in or put a hot lap in and then do an in lap. So three laps because of tire warmers. He said, has anybody done the calculations to work out if they've got to do two, maybe three warm-up laps before they can put the hot one in and then come in? So we're now maybe looking at five laps rather than three. How much extra fuel are they burning in those two laps, which will potentially not save the environment as much? I was like, yeah, okay, that's a good point. We saw that in some of the sessions this year that kind of they couldn't get tires up to temperature. So yeah, I think there's been a big rethink on that one. The last one that I want your view on, and I really hadn't thought about this, having not been on the other side of the fence, and maybe we asked Paul about it, is this ban on the 2026 development? So it's not the power units, it's all the chassis and the aero and all that kind of stuff. Everything to conform with the new regulations. They said you're not allowed to work on that car until 2025.
Right, we talked about this, yep.
And yeah, and what Blake said was, hang on a minute, it's a new set of regs. And what tends to happen is that the FIA let the teams have at it and go off and develop all their concepts. And then they tend to have this kind of, I'll show you mine if you show me yours type thing, where the FIA will come and have a look at these new concepts they've come up with and gone, yeah, that's not really what we were intending in these regs. And or the teams might even approach them and ask for, does this conform? I don't, you know, we're going to do this whole thing. They might seek approval to make sure they're going in the right direction and don't burn a whole bunch of cash on something that transpires to be illegal. So if they get away with all of that, because apparently that typically happens like quite far out from the set of a new set of regs, are they cutting off their nose to spite their face here? Are they worried that Red Bull are going to go off and dominate again or what? Because he said it just seems really, really weird to not let teams develop against a new set of regs, to see what they come up with, to see what direction things are going in, to see that it actually the regs are going to do what you intended them to do. It seems like very weird for the FIA to have kind of pulled that move. I was like, I'd never thought of that. I was interested to see what you thought, Brian.
I hadn't thought of it that way, but I do think of it in a new environment of the cost cap era, which is not, we've not had regs developed in the cost cap era.
True.
So in that regard, I kind of get it. Just to explain what I mean, there's not endless funds. So what they're trying to do is create regulations that bring some more parity to the sport. There's other reasons, of course, but what they're not hoping to have happen is someone like a Red Bull, and they're the ones at this particular point, but if it had been prior in cars like Mercedes, where you are so good under the current regs that you start earlier on the new car and can still keep winning or be near the top while everyone else is battling and can't even start the new car, you've allowed the team that hit it out of the park now to already have an advantage in a cost cap era for the future. So I kind of get the point. What they're trying to do is keep that theory and sort of ethos of the cost cap to say we're trying to bring some level of parity to the sport. And by doing that, we're not going to let the people with the home runs going on start early. And you're basically locking in Red Bull and to some extent a McLaren at this point or a Ferrari or Mercedes above everybody else. And there's no chance, if you could start early, that we'd see Sauber or we'd see, you know, like a Haas or a Williams make that leap. But if you give everyone the same amount of time and kind of the same amount of money, then I think there's a better chance of having that parity. So that would be my only counterpoint to that point.
I was going to say, the flip side to that is, you know, you get someone, let's say a Williams, that because there isn't going to be such a long time to sort of fine-tune your design, you're going to crush it into a season now, basically. You're going to have to do it in the 2025 season to be ready for 26. So you do this thing that you're pretty sure is in the regs, and you go all guns blazing on that, and then they say it's not. Your entire car because
it's the same risk for everyone, though, right?
True.
So,
oh well, it'll be fun to see how it all plays out. But that was it. That was it from kind of news and social this week. Really, not a very quiet week. Lots of drivers on holidays. People heading back tired from traveling around the global year.
Yep.
I did see if you follow Pit Lane Paul on Instagram, then he might have even put it on Twitter as well. He did his end of season travel video of all the places he's flown to. Oh my gosh, talk about air miles.
I mean, it's unbelievable. I if you haven't seen it, go find it on Instagram on Pit Lane Paul's account, because it is epic the amount of time he spent in the air. Forget traveling and airports and the front and back end, but just literally on a plane. Now we have even further evidence of why he was so wiped out at the end of Abu Dhabi. But you know what's never wiped out? The video vault. Let's open that bad boy up. I got to make sure I find the closer quick, too, because this is a fast one. All right, it's open. Best team radio moments of 2023 on the Formula One channel. Now, they did, of course, because they have this partnership with Paramount Plus. They had to throw a little Paramount Plus at the end of it. I don't know why, but okay. 8 minutes and 30 seconds. It was great. And this is the only one I had time to do this week, and I'll explain that in a second. It was great. I just love sort of these retros they do at the end of the seasons where they go back through best team radio, best overtakes. You know, they make some of the animated stuff. I'm here for it. And so this is the first one that I found from this season, best team radio moments. My favorite, I think, was two or three in the queue, and I'm going to give this little spoiler, but I'll let you have the other 20 to yourself, or I guess 19 others to yourself. When George says, "Has anyone reported rain on the track? Or is it just me with sweat in my helmet?" And they're like, "Nope, just you, mate." That one still makes me laugh to this day. I got to put that on my list to go find, download, chop, and get ready for next year. So that
we need that
epic
in the soundboard for next year, for next season.
100%, 100%. And that was the only video I had time to watch before I close it. I'll explain why. I had the opportunity, and I'm the luckiest guy around. I have both of my parents, and my mom's hit a milestone birthday, I'll say. And so for her birthday, I took her and my pops to see a Marquette basketball game. Marquette's a college here in the States, I grew up right near it. And so as basketball fans, my parents, we watched a lot of it. And so we've built this allegiance over, quite frankly, my entire life to watching this basketball team. I didn't go there, but they're fun to watch. And they're having a great season. And I somehow scored tickets to a luxury box for a game in Madison on Saturday, yesterday. And so I took my parents there. And I'm only telling this story because, A, I didn't have a lot of time to do a lot of other things because work was nuts and I had to get it all done by Thursday and then Friday off with my family. But the real reason is we have played some sound effects on this here podcast. And one of them is when a driver sends it up the inside, occasionally I'll play this one. Onions! And it's not the cleanest audio. It's onions. It's Billy Raftery, a college basketball announcer who's of some well-known status, yelling onions as a guy does something amazing. And I'm at the hotel where we're staying, and the team was staying there as well. And so we saw a lot of the players. My mom got to meet some of the players. Totally jinxed them because they sucked in the game the next day. But the point I'm making is, as I'm walking out to get a shuttle, neither one of my parents were able to walk too much to get a shuttle to the game. I look, and there is Tim Brando and Billy Raftery. The guys calling the game are standing right in front of me. And I was wearing my gear, and I said, "Hey, guys, it's going to be a great game today. We're going to take this game." Again, they didn't. I jinxed it or whatever happened. But Tim Brando came over, and he's got a great voice. He does CBS and Fox, and I guess it's Fox now, but I remember him from the CBS games. And Tim Brando comes over and says, "Hey, how you doing? I'm Tim Brando." I'm like, "I know who you are. I'm Brian Saperstein." And we were chatting for a little bit, and Raftery was in the middle of a conversation. But in my back of my mind, I'm thinking, do I go interrupt and hold up my phone and go, "Can I please get a clean onions call from you so I can use it on my podcast?"
You did?
I did not.
Oh, I thought you were leading up to a much better onions. So this is in the same way that Marquette disappointed you. You
just disappointed
me
everyone,
because that was
everybody.
Such a long lead in
I
that I was expecting new onions.
I really thought I was, but he was talking to somebody and then hopped in the car and he waved and wished me well. But I didn't want to go hold my phone up and go, "Can I get you to scream onions into my phone?" So with
I think
that
you could have done. I think you absolutely could have done, and you just missed that opportunity. I know. Brian, I'm so disappointed in you.
I know. What are the odds of getting custom
just,
made
just
sound
close
effects
the vault and
from
let's get
Billy Raftery? Oh man, move it on.
Okie dokie. So, just before we kind of dive into our 2023 look back, let's just one little thing we didn't kind of scoop up last week. We talked about. You know, why is it a big deal to finish in the constructors? And we sort of said it's all to do with money. So they released the estimated prize fund share this week. So looking back over 2023, Red Bull for finishing first, $140 million.
Wow.
Mercedes, 131. Ferrari, 122. McLaren, 113. Aston Martin, 104. Alpine, 95. Williams, 87. AlphaTauri, 78. Alpha, 69. And Haas, 60. Less than half of what Red Bull got. And actually the thing that kind of I was thinking about as I looked at this is that for Mercedes and Ferrari, actually the big shootout to finish second, I don't really think has got anything to do with financial reward, because those two are both so rich as teams and already hit the cost cap that an extra 8 million or whatever is just going to not really do anything. They're probably not going to be allowed to spend it. So actually it was more ego as to who finished second. It'd be nice to say they finished second. You're on the bottom end and you think people like Haas that can't hit the cap at the moment, that's really disappointing for them to have finished dead last. 60 million. I mean, I'd love $60 million, but when you look at the prizes all the way up the rest of it, they're already at the back. I know they'll get the most wind tunnel time, right? For sucking so hard.
Yep. Yep.
But they've only got 60 million to kind of go towards a number they can't already hit anyway in terms of the budget. They're going to have to find some big ass sponsors with deep pockets who want to say, "I know you're terrible, but here's a boatload of money to help you less terrible."
Well, and here's the kicker when you kind of think about it. I don't think Haas have their own wind tunnel? Or are they renting time? Because I know, you know, it was a big deal when McLaren built their whole new situation with their own wind tunnel. Yeah. And all these things, not every team I don't think has. I think what I would think Alpine does because of the legacy of Enstone. I don't know. Anyway, my point is it a little bit like you get the most wind tunnel time, you get the least amount of money, but now you got to use your least amount of money to go rent some wind tunnel time because you can use it the most? I mean, like
Aston Martin with their new facility. Yes, Haas, that will cost you $60 million for wind tunnel.
For 5 minutes.
Yeah, so I just thought that was interesting. But,
I agree with you.
Okay, so let's go all the way back to the beginning and actually remember in the
1950?
Same way that we just announced 1950. Yeah.
Are we talking about Farina?
The beginning of 23.
Oh, okay.
So same way that we were just talking about the F1 commission and what's going to be new for next year, there was obviously a whole bunch of things that were new this year that we kind of, you lose and you forget as you kind of start going through the seasons. So, and I think it's the first one here. And I think I need you to have a sound effect ready, Brian. But the floors got raised this year to combat porpoising. And I think the feeling was that this year that kind of probably robbed us of the really close racing that we saw in 22. So, yes, we got rid of porpoising.
This.
There we go.
But we did lose some of the wheel-to-wheel, or I guess nose-to-tail action that we were enjoying so much in 22.
I think I saw a measurement come out that they said that the just by raising the floor, the 15 mil or whatever it was, the drop off in aero performance behind the car that you were the one that was following was it was like a 30% reduction compared to what we'd seen the year before when they could get so much closer.
But do you remember? I mean, so I'm so here's the thing. I'm with you. Like, I remember that. I wish we'd had better action. But do you remember this Baku in 22? This, the sound of the Mercedes
Oh,
going down the
yeah.
straight, and then Lewis.
Were they the only team that really?
Yeah, my back is killing me. I mean, like, thank God they
Did
had
we
to
get
do
a
it. But
technical directive this year just because Mercedes were the ones really suffering from it? I think Ferrari did have a bit of porpoising, but
yeah.
lots of the other teams seemed to get it under control. So was that a rule made for one team? Please don't hate me, Mercedes fans.
I mean, I Mercedes had the worst porpoising. There were other teams, but Toto, he definitely printed it out.
I have it printed out.
So when he was dealing with the porpoising challenges, and Red Bull and Checo saying their cars suck too. No, I'm with you. I remember that. I remember the way they started that. We had the, oh, as well, the new rounded roll hoop in 23 because when Joe had flipped it, I think it was Silverstone,
Yeah,
and he was
Silverstone.
spinning wildly, but he had the roll hoop dug in. And flipped him at the end when he got to the gravel. And then, unfortunately, there was the space between the crash barrier and the crash fence. And he got wedged in there, which will forever endear me to George, who hopped out of his car and ran over there and jumped on the tires to help out. As much as you may think George is this, that, or the other, or had a bad season, he definitely is a good dude for having done
Yep,
that. And
100%.
you nailed this one here. Mirrors were bigger this season. How could we
We
have
made,
forgotten that
I
that
don't
happened?
know, we made such a joke about it at the beginning of the season about they're going to have these big new like white screen TVs on each side of the car and they're going to be able to see everything. And I can't even tell you that I even remember looking at the cars this year and going, oh, bigger
Mirrors.
mirrors. I
Yeah, they definitely
do.
didn't have the kind you put on like an RV where it's a panoramic thing where you can see everything all around you.
And I was going to
Oh.
say, there was definitely a few incidents this year, and I think we're only going back to Vegas. Was it Vegas when George
Oh yeah,
definitely
Vegas.
couldn't see things in his mirrors?
I don't know if he's couldn't see or just didn't look. I think George
True.
pulled an 80-year-old person in Vegas driving along. I'm going to turn now. Who cares who's there?
Then something that I don't even know that we picked up on or even really gave any airtime
We
to, but
talked a
I'm
little
not
bit.
sure I was a big fan. At the beginning of the season, I don't remember us saying that this was coming out. Or if we did, it was probably you talking about tires and I got bored. But the alternate tire allocation was trialed at Hungary and the Italian GP to try to have reduced tire usage. Now, have I got this wrong? Or was Hungary the first time and then they had to slightly tweak the rules? Because wasn't that the one where Lando couldn't go through to the last
No.
round of qualifying or something because of the tires, or is that not
I think
this?
you're getting these mixed up a little. So the alternate tire allocation was less tires, and the
Less
way they used them
tires,
in
but
Hungary was what was. I remember us debating at Hungary because the amount of things they had to do during quali in the race to manage against this wasn't worth the total offset if they did it forever. And we debated those two things. What you're talking about with Lando was, I think, Baku in the sprint race.
Ah, oh, the
Where the
sprint,
beginning of the
yeah.
sprint format, you'd have new tires to start the you'd have new mediums in Q2, in SQ2, I guess. And he had no more new tires, and he wasn't allowed to run. And so that was, I think, the thing you're thinking about. And I could be
Did they
very
change
wrong
that
on
though? Because
that,
that
but
didn't
someone let
happen. No,
us
I
know.
think you are right, but that didn't
Yeah, I'm
happen in every
right.
sprint, did it?
No, they changed that afterwards because then
Okay.
didn't Lance have a problem where he had to use the mediums in Spa and then he spun off because he was or hards or whatever and it was like the bad temperature and then he started adjusting kind of without telling us after that.
No, you are right, because I even put this in the notes. If we go ahead to the next section, I was busy copying and pasting, so I knew I'd seen it, but I've got it muddled up when I'm reading it out. So yeah, this year we had six sprints instead of three that we'd had the previous year. Oh, you're going to say something, Brian?
Yeah, I've of the two of us, I'm the one who likes the sprints the least, and I do enjoy it when it's good, and I've admitted that. But I've always said it's sort of divorced of the rest of the weekend, this little blip on a Saturday. Does it make Friday afternoon more fun? Yes, can't doubt that. I agree, but I just don't like how uncoordinated it is, and some of the silly rules they try to make into this
That
thing
was
that,
new this year, right? The thing that really
yes,
annoys you is that
correct.
they changed the format because people didn't like, oh my gosh, what was it the year before then for the sprints? We had what, sprint on Friday? Because anyway, if we tried to work out what the new rule is, we might remember what the old one was. So this year, this season, we
Look at
had
us.
single practice on Friday, and then we had the qualifying
For
session,
the
which was
race.
for Sunday's race. So
Right.
Friday and Sunday were the Grand Prix. Saturday became Sprint Saturday. That's what we had this year. And to your point, that kind of meant that we'd got Grand Prix action on Friday, Grand Prix action on a Sunday, and kind of random bit in the middle.
Yeah, it's like having the first quarter of an NFL game, and then everyone stops for a little bit, and we're going to have a punt, pass, and run contest amongst the teams, which is not at all indicative of the score, and then we pick the game back up later. I'm like, why? Why would we do that that way? But it, I mean, it's more F1, and yes, it's fun. I do like some of the rules in SQ, or you know, sprint qualies, where it's shorter times. Was it 12, 10, 8, Q1, Q2, Q3, or SQ1? I can't keep doing that. You get my point. I like that. I like the action they bring. I like the idea of having tire jeopardy to some extent in the sprints, but you've known me. I've said this for a very long time. You could fix regular quali just by going back and bringing back one rule that they used to have. You don't even have to be as big as saying it's a one-lap shootout. Just go back the way it used to be and say, all right, at the end of Q2, whomever's not into the top 10, or you can have free choice, and whomever makes the top 10 has to use those tires. Strategy, tire management, it all matters. I
agree with you. And then you're right. This is the bit, as I knew I remembered putting it in here, but I got it in the wrong place. It was the tire rules for the sprint shootout were modified for the second weekend, to enabling drivers and teams who made it through to shootout three to use any set of soft tires. Previously, they'd been required to use a brand new set of soft tires. And the change was made after Lando Norris could not run in Azerbaijan because he didn't have any brand new tires.
So I got it wrong. It was SQ3, not SQ2, but it was the same theory.
Well, you know, I messed it up and thought it was the alternate tire allocation. You messed it up. You know,
and so we'll see, right? I mean, that's this. We should put a pin in this because, and everybody listening, like, let's keep our eyes on what they do come up with the sprint format. As we talked about 2 weeks ago, and the new regulations and the commission that met, might have been last week, when they said, we will work on making the sprints better, but with a TBD, you know, it sort of ended with a bum, 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 more to come. So we will see what happens. I'm excited. I'm like, again, I don't like the way it is today. If they're working to improve it, I'm all for it. Even if it's not going to get to what I want it to be, you know, I'm a big fan of F1. I'll take whatever they, you know, put out there for me to consume. And I'll complain about it politely here on the podcast if I don't like it, and just, you know, keep enjoying it. So we'll see what comes.
Yep. And then if you kind of look back at some of the little things that stood out across the year, put the title fight to one side, because we'll go into that in more detail. If we go all the way back to the beginning.
What fight?
Well, okay, the title. If we put the title to one side. It seems an absolute eternity ago now that we were talking about Lance Stroll falling off a bike and breaking his wrist. And would he even be able to take part in the first race of the season?
We've given Lance a lot of crap. And I've given you a lot of crap for saying he was the third best driver, like the three races in. But
he was at that point.
Well, hold on.
In time.
He had a lot of moments where he looked terrible. But when they redid the car and it got worse for both. And Lance looked uninterested. But then when they kind of figured out the ungrades, downgrades, upgrades, whatever they were doing, he had a couple top fives in a row quietly to end the season. And he was driving in Bahrain, and we saw this in practice with one hand at times because it hurt so bad to use his other hand to take corners. And that guy who we like to joke about and rip on, he's a tough dude to go out there with a broken wrist and another hand that's damaged, and we weren't even sure he could pass the can you get out of the car fast enough test, and he still finished very well in those first few races. So yeah, like, I mean, I know we talk about him, the cycling accident, and we like to poke fun of him at times. Lance acquitted himself pretty decently over the course of the year.
Yeah, he did. I mean, we didn't have a Latifi or a Mazepin this year.
Well, De Vries was as close as it was going to be, and he wasn't that bad.
De Vries. Well, talking of De Vries, so yeah, that kind of the other kind of thing, especially talking about broken bones as well. Yuki just didn't get to know a teammate for more than about 5 minutes, and then there was suddenly somebody else sat next to him. And, oh, okay, you're racing this week. So we had De Vries in there, and the expectation around him was high because he'd come in and done it. He'd done the one race for Williams the year before.
Yes, it was at Imola. No, Monza. It was at Monza, and it was great.
And he was brilliant the whole weekend, and everybody was looking.
He finished ninth, I believe.
Yeah. He got points, didn't he? So expectation was high around him, and I think there was a sprinkling of bad luck in here. Maybe did the expectation way too heavy on his shoulders, but let's just say he did not cover himself in glory in those. He was there for 10 races. I actually thought they got rid of him earlier than that. And just to go through this, he was 14th, 14th, 15th, retired, 18th, 12th, okay, 14th, 18th, 17th, 17th. Now, the problem was Yuki wasn't exactly one spot ahead of him every single time, right?
Nope. Yuki had that run of 10ths and 11ths, something like five to start the season, where he was always 10th or 11th. And he was always sniffing around at the points the whole time. I think he had a couple races where one where he was like 19th, where in Austria, where I think he retired. I can't remember what the challenge with the car was. So yeah, you're right. It wasn't very close.
It wasn't close. I mean, and he did just seem to... There were no sort of green shoots of recovery. If anything, he kind of, some of his best results were at the beginning of the season. He just seemed to just drop into this 17th and 18th malaise that he just couldn't break out of. So all hail the honey badger. 11th race into the season, Danny Rick comes back and it's like, okay, here we go. This is the return story. This is the cast out. Didn't end well at McLaren. We've missed his smile on the grid. Danny Rick's going to come blazing back. And... well, kind of did.
Kind of did.
Two races.
Yeah, a few races. And then what was it in the Netherlands, right? I think it was a Dutch Grand Prix.
Yep.
Where he's coming around one of my favorite turns that sort of banked. I call it the carousel, even though it's not really what it is. And so he kind of comes around that carousel. And whoops, there's Oscar Piastri in the wall. And Danny Rick has to bail out instead of hitting Oscar and hits the wall. And it looked fairly benign of a crash, but he obviously it wasn't, and he had a massive problem with his wrist and hand, so he's out.
Yeah, and then comes Liam Lawson.
Man, he was good,
and actually he had more races than I thought, so he came in and covered that weekend, because I think he had to, like, was that quali when Danny Rick broke his...
It was late in practice or early in quali. It was not
one of the two, because I'm pretty sure Liam Lawson's first driving of that car was the formation lap.
I think it was practice. I think it was quali, where it was his first time in the car.
It was quali was his first time. Okay. It would have made a better story if it was the race day, Brian. We could have gone with that.
It might have been.
So he came in 13th on his first race, 11th on his second, 9th, got into the points in Singapore, which we will come back to in a minute. And then an 11th and a 17th. I mean... didn't crash it, didn't spin out, didn't, you know, embarrass himself at all. I think he was really kind of showing that he had the pedigree to be in F1. And there was a lot of noise that he was going to score himself a seat this year off the back of that performance. I mean, I think he did everything and more than he could have been expected to do in that little stint that he did.
In the AlphaTauri. Yeah, agreed. And so he was 11th in Japan. And the interesting part to me is Yuki was 12th. So in Yuki's home race, where he's all hyped up and did have a good quali, Liam put in an 11th. He obviously, as you said, was 9th in Singapore. We'll put a pin in that. But 2 points, which no one had scored any points in that seat at that point. And then at the same time, though, AlphaTauri was bringing upgrades to the car. So when Danny Rick came back, it was kind of like a different car to some extent that Yuki and Danny were driving by that point. And Danny Rick closed out the season, and we saw some feistiness out of that AlphaTauri, which was exciting to see. Like I said, I mean, I love when teams can figure things out and bring upgrades. Obviously, the McLaren story this year is kind of like a one-off. Those are so rare, where you go from being total garbage at the back. When Lando was basically 18th and 17th, or maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit, but it was terrible to start the season. You remember he had six stops? Wasn't there pneumatic problems in his first race? And he just kept stopping and stopping. And anyway, my point is, then all of a sudden, Lando, the car was good. And as soon as Lando got good, and he was passing someone with blue flags, he came on the radio with this.
It's not racing for anything.
They're not racing for anything. That was you for eight races or whatever. And then now you got a good car. And he's like, well, they're not racing for anything. Get out of the way.
We saw that a lot this year in terms of cars that started off poor.
Yes.
And really found something.
I mean, it was exciting.
This is probably just me being old now and just my memory is not fantastic. But I don't remember feeling like this. I know upgrades do improve performance. But McLaren, first handful of races versus McLaren... second half of season. I mean, that was two different cars. We don't normally see a car go from pootling around the back, thinking, why am I even bothering, to legitimately challenging the Red Bulls, especially on qualifying and to some degree in the race pace, depending on the track. We just don't see that kind of
Lando
turnaround.
Lando was 17th in Barcelona, and after the upgrades were applied in Austria, two races later, he was fourth.
Yeah.
Hello.
And then he went on a run of, didn't he go like on a run of podiums as well?
Yeah, well, he was fourth in Austria, and then two podiums in a row. He had a seventh,
second
a seventh,
twice,
an
right?
eighth, and then two more seconds, to your point, and then a third and a second. I mean, he was, that car was good. And Oscar, by the way, same kind of thing, same meteoric rise when they got the upgrades on his car. It wasn't in Austria, it took an extra race or two. Because sometimes teams will see how the delta between the two cars will upgrade one, not because they're favored, you know, showing favoritism to a driver, but you have to have some like a control of the old car and then the variable of the new car. So people always, someone will say, oh, it's obvious they're going to give it to Lando. Well, maybe they give it to Lando because they trust him to bring it home, but it's not their it's not a favoritism thing. It's a, we need a control in a variable group, like any good science experiment would do. Cool. So yeah, it was, I agree with you.
Going highbrow.
I know. I do love, but yeah, it was fun. This season saw a lot of upgrades to a lot of cars. And then we always joked about, what happened to Aston Martin with the downgrades, where they were so competitive and then other people caught up to them. But at the same time, they put things on the car that didn't work. Haas did the same thing.
Yeah.
So it was fascinating to see some teams like, yeah, not so good with the
I'd love to get somebody on. If anybody, obviously we could try and tap Paul up to find someone for us. But if anyone happens to know anyone out there that works in this area, because I'd love to understand how you go from developing something which you're pretty sure is an upgrade, to with all the science, all the 3D modeling, the wind, everything, and then you stick it on the car. It must be heartbreaking when the car goes around the first set of practice sessions and you go, oh God, take the upgrades off. I mean,
could you imagine? And one last note on this before we move on. We did know, and we talked about this, the whole world talked about this, but in case you missed it and were newer, the McLaren that they started the season with, they told us in preseason testing and at Bahrain, this is not the final car. It will change. We know that. We're working on what it's supposed to be. So they showed up with a car they knew was bad. But no one expected this kind of upgrade. I thought it was going to be like what ended up with AlphaTauri, where you like move up a couple spots and you have a good race and you compete for eighth. I didn't think we'd see podiums from 17th all of a sudden.
Not just Lando either. I mean, Oscar's put in an absolute stellar.
Amazing.
And again, I don't want to go too big on kind of our views of drivers. We're going to have all that backed up by stats. But great little game that I think caught my attention subconsciously trawling through Twitter a couple of times, but I know we never spoke about it on this pod, but apparently it ran for pretty much like the whole season. And I love this. I love this stupidity of blokes messing about. Let's put it that way, right? The sticker game. And if you've probably seen this, and I know I saw some Ferrari admin posts and people doing videos where throughout the season, Red Bull, Ferrari and McLaren basically engage in a full-on sticker war. And the idea was to place your team sticker on equipment of the opposition. It ratcheted up such a level that they were actually then trying to get the stickers on the other drivers. I hadn't even seen this. I've gone and watched it. This is brilliant. In Abu Dhabi, Verstappen managed to get Leclerc's overalls covered in Red Bull stickers. But then Ferrari managed to get him back. But the best one was that through the driver's parade, Verstappen managed to get a Red Bull sticker onto the back of Lando Norris, and everyone else knew and Lando didn't. And then I saw that little nudge, look at him, he's got a Red Bull sticker on his back. I love stuff like this. It humanizes them. They're not just these elite drivers that have got no time for anything else. We've heard pull stories about people punching each other in the nads being one game. The sticker game, I wish I'd been part of the sticker game or seen it happening more through the year.
I honestly didn't see it happening through the year. I saw it in Abu Dhabi and I'm like, have I been missing this the whole time? And it was like a little thing. I don't remember where I saw it. Maybe because I was watching some of the pre-race. I don't know. But I saw them going around and like I saw Max and Charles, as you mentioned it. And, Max gets it on there, but Charles knows what he's doing. And he's kind of like getting his arm back there, like popping his shoulder out of circuit to get that thing off. And then running after Max and they're laughing. And I didn't realize the widespread nature of the sticker game. But I think it's fantastic. I would ask if they could use dirty side stickers next year, though. That's what we really need them to do.
We have to ship a case over for them and tell them we're sponsoring the sticker game next season.
Yeah, whomever can get this on someone's overalls, we will feature you on the podcast.
Well,
like we wouldn't if Max called up and said, can I come on?
Oh man. Anyway, so let's sign off on two
Yeah,
big things.
let's do it.
One slightly bigger than the other, but the first one was almost my saddest moment of the entire year. And please, Max fans, don't hate me for this, but Singapore was the little insight into it's like when in a quiz show when you lose the final round and they show you the prize you could have won. Oh man,
Oh, I should
it was
play
a
the music.
speedboat.
Where is it? It's the
But
here it is. This is the sound when you lose the game show. You could have had a Ferrari, but now not.
So, and we will in the next review, we will obviously be heaping praise on Max and Red Bull in general. But when Singapore came along on the calendar, rumored not to be a Red Bull strong circuit, and it wasn't, and we had the most exciting banger of a race that I think we had all season, with multiple teams going for the win. Carlos Sainz eventually brought it home. That I was just so happy but so sad at the same time, because it was like, and everyone's like, oh yeah, it's going to be the same in Japan next week. I'm like, no, it won't be. Japan is
Nope.
going to be normal service resumed. Singapore was amazing. Loved it.
It was, and it so I'm with you, right? I almost feel like I need to apologize for reasons I can't understand. I'm not saying it's not fun when Max wins. Here's what happened to me, and I don't know if I'm emblematic of all F1 fans or what, but we had four races to start the year, five if you count Miami, where we had some battling where we didn't know what was going to happen, and a lot of the battling was Max and Checo. But Checo won a couple of the first four
Yes.
races.
Yep.
And so you're thinking, all right, here we go. The Red Bull's fast, McLaren's crap, P teams are trying to figure it out, but Checo's going to battle Max. And it's not to say that we don't think Max is better than Checo, but four races, two for each. I'm like, all right, maybe this is a thing. And yes, I know in Azerbaijan, Max got unlucky with the timing of the safety car. You remember that, where it went full
Yes.
VSC
Yep.
and he'd already pitted and he got kind of hosed. That was bad luck. But Checo took it anyway. And so we're thinking maybe there's a battle here. We didn't know Checo was going to go into witness protection on his quali efforts after Miami, where he couldn't even make it to Q out of Q3 ever, into Q3 ever. So it was just confusing. But I built this barrier in my mind that said, that's all right if Max wins. Well, it'll be fun to see who finishes second. And I built this whole narrative in my brain that says, whomever finishes second, the battle for second is just as good as the battle for the lead. I was wrong because, as you said, Singapore was exciting, not just because it was a good race and it was a good race, but also because that battle for first mattered. And all of a sudden, the thing I'd hidden behind a wall and said didn't matter and I could enjoy a race without it, I'm like, oh my God, it's all this much better with it.
Yeah, that was what Singapore did for me as well. It 100% agree with you. I bricked off the part of my brain that says battle for first, second and third, still the podium. I mean, it's amazing. Just let's
It's
live for
good.
second, best of the rest. It's great, and it is. And you convince yourself, I guess, because Max won so many in a row, you get conditioned into I'm here for second. It's all about second, baby. Congratulations again, Max. But now I'm here for second. Who? What we got? What we got? And then Singapore came around and just. What are the big balls on the end of those chains just came and smashed through that brick wall in my mind and was like, no, this is what it's about. The races for wins are just ridiculously more exciting and more interesting than
And
races for
George was
second.
on the
So.
flyer coming up, and Carlos is holding Lando in his DRS like an expert, scientist doing the maths, as you would say, in his head. And they're kind of going around, and I'm like, this is epic. And then George bended on one of the last laps when he was really, he was, it was all or nothing, and he went for all. And I respect that because I think George kind of knew I don't have a chance at winning any of the races because of Max. So if I think I can get Carlos, so I'm gonna go
I
for
think
it.
that might have added to the spiciness of Singapore as
Yeah,
well, because I
it
think the
did.
whole grid, or any, sorry, not the whole grid, any car that knew they were fast enough if it wasn't for Max, this was their one shot. This is the one that you had to bank because Max is not going to win this race. So therefore, this is it, guys. This is the one that you're going to have to turn up and get this done. And hopes for next year would obviously to be have an actual title fight, but actually. If I can't have that, if Max is going to dominate again, I would just like a few more Singapores.
I
If
agree.
we could just have, if Max goes off into the distance and wins it again at a canter, fine. But if we can get a Singapore, if we could just maybe a couple of DNFs for him, just so that some other folk get a chance at winning.
So are you suggesting we have Paul walk over to the Red Bull garage and unplug a few things before the race?
Yeah, well, that looks important. Click.
Yeah. Who needs these, these leads over here? Boop.
No. Oh, and last but definitely not least, in terms of our look back over the non-championship element of the season, the highlight for me, I'm going to assume you,
yes,
as well,
yeah, you're good,
because we did a whole episode dedicated to it, just still makes me smile thinking about Canada weekend. It was just one of those memories that is just like with me forever now, because just brilliant. Sitting next to you in your emergency poncho, especially the first time you unpacked it, trying to work out how to put on said poncho, being fleeced over $50 beers, listening to mispronunciations of Magnussen
and Sainz. The whole time? It never stopped? That was the best part.
The whole time, just randomly, just generally walking around looking like grinning idiots, looking at each other going, can you believe we're here? No, can you believe we're here? No. Only to have that go up to levels I could never even possibly have imagined when Paul got us into the paddock. I mean, just chef's kiss of a weekend. It was amazing.
It was. It really was. I don't even know what to add. Yeah, the poncho thing was funny. I still think back and laugh. I had this tiny little folded up emergency poncho in the bottom of my backpack. And it rained a ton. And actually, interestingly, one of the team radios from the video vault was Valtteri going through a puddle that looked deeper than his car at Canada. And he's like, the weather is not fit for a duck. And so, like, and I'm thinking, you're darn right. And, you know, as you're driving through that, you know who's getting drenched from head to toe? Me and Rob. You know why? Because we're walking across the friggin' St. Lawrence River on this bridge with no guardrails and 47-mile-an-hour winds.
I thought I might die that day.
I did, too. I've never seen a collective group of idiots walking so far away from the edge, because we all knew it was death if you got close. And it was so windy. And the rain is somehow going up my shorts. I don't understand how that happened, but it did. And my shoes were unwearable for a day. I mean, like, I thought they would fall apart. They were so wet. And the best part is we turned the corner after the bridge, and the dude selling the t-shirts had a joke about it. They're like, what did they say? Freshly washed? You know, yes. $10 Ferrari
t-shirts. Pre-washed t-shirts.
Because they're drenched. They're like, you had to wring them out to even see who the drivers were on each of the things.
And I was just, you know, coming from the UK where it rains a lot, I was so confident that my Virgin London Marathon rainproof jacket, I was very proud of, because I got it as part of the London Marathon weekend. I'm like looking at you with your, whatever it was,
stupid
Costco
yellow
$1 yellow poncho. Poncho, and thinking, well, I'm okay because I've got this deluxe rain jacket. Don't know what rain they tested that on, but I mean, that thing went translucent, stuck to my skin.
The highlight for me was being able to use the porta potty without having to unpop any of the poncho buttons. That was pretty good when I could do that. I'm like, that's talent right there.
Yeah, I mean, that's the sort of thing you aspire to. So,
Rob also made me walk around the track like 8 times. One time he goes, we're going to do an entire track walk in between qualies. I'm like, we are? And the next thing you know, it took us like the full time because the traffic was so bad at the northern part by the hairpin. But we made it through.
It was atrocious. I was really regretting. I was trying to put the brave face onto you, going, oh, yeah, it's going to be great. We're going to do a full track loop. And when we got stuck down by the hairpin, I was like, this is the most stupid decision ever. Why didn't we just stay in the grandstand?
I didn't know if it was mud or human sewage that we were walking through, but it was bad. And anyway, it was a great time. I mean, it was epically fun. And Paul, yes, if you happen to be listening to this this portion of it, yeah, thanks again. The paddock thing was epic. I mean, it was just epic. Like, you can't explain what it meant to Rob and I. It was so much fun. But the whole weekend was just tremendous. I mean, like, our seats were great. Lynn, we've said this before, thank you. This will be the last time we give you the full thanks. I still owe you something. I'll send you something here shortly. But thank you for letting us purchase the tickets from you, because they were amazing. And, like, the seats we had, you could see the start-finish line. We could see them coming out into the wall of champions from the left. And then at the right, we had the podium. And then going into turn one, and you had all the garages in front of us, and we saw the unsafe releases happening. Both are like, oh, you know, like, that's going to be an unsafe release. And we could see the TV in front of us with the track commentary. And like you said, when the guy first said Magnussen, I'm like, who now? And then he kept doing it all weekend. And like, it's those little inside joke things that were fantastic. But seeing the cars in front of us for the first time in my life was just amazing. And the first time they went by, we both looked at each other like, oh my God, they're going a bazillion miles an hour. And that was practice. And then in quali, they're going by next to each other. And in the race, you're like, how is that possible? They're going that fast, that close.
Actually, one thing I don't think I brought up when we did the whole Canada review episode, and even just talking to you, just not on this pod, but just me and you chatting, the one thing I don't think I've ever spoken to you about is they talk about how big these cars are these days, and you know, going around Monaco, what have you, they basically can't barely have to do a 3-point turn to get around some of the corners. They're so big now. That actually really hit me when we were stood like touching distance to Valtteri's car in there. It is a big piece of equipment. I'm not talking about his ass.
By the calendar.
I knew that we were going to get to see them in the flesh going by on the racetrack, but actually to have that experience to be in the garage and there, right next to the thing, like I joke with you, I could have hopped in it. Arrested and deported. But yeah, I mean...
I think you just get thrown in the St. Lawrence River. It's like, good luck to you.
So, I mean, really, the big ask here is... looks like the Canada ticket sold out, and we didn't have a Lynn this year to be able to get our hands on anything. So if anybody who listens is either exceptionally rich or knows someone who's exceptionally rich that wants to sponsor the Dirty Side on tour next season, we will willingly take tickets. I don't know what we're going to do, Brian. We're going to have to maybe go and knock on ESPN's door again and say, come on, don't send all these professional reporters to races. Let's have a real fan's eye view. Let's have the Dirty Side on tour.
I mean, right?
Three American races next year.
Yeah, it can't hurt to try some either media type things or talking to other people. And yeah, we'll see what's what. I may still have a hookup for us for Canada for next year from a different angle, but no promises. So.
Well, you've said it on the pod now, so I basically...
Well, I also said no promises on the pod.
No, so. That bit doesn't work.
You can cut that out.
Take it back.
Yeah, all right.
So, there we are. First off week of the postseason. I'm not even sure that makes sense.
No, nope. It's an on week of the postseason. It's an off week of racing.
It is an on week. Yeah, first on week of the off season. Anyway, we'll be reaching out to Paul to try to sort out a review with him. Like I said, Sap is now going to go and bury himself under statistics because we will do a proper pull apart of every angle that you can think of and even more that you have never even thought of. I'm just putting the pressure on you here, Brian, for the world's biggest set of stats ever.
I'm ready for it. And with that, we like to thank everybody for listening. It's going to be a fun off season. As we joked last week, there's a lot of stuff in the hopper that we're planning. So, make sure to stay tuned, and as we get into the month of December, wish everyone a very happy holidays upcoming. Join us next week for more fun on the Dirty Side.